You're listening to episode 4 of The GDPR Guy, a GDPR interview with Silence. Welcome to The GDPR Guy, the podcast dedicated to helping your organization comply with the General Data Protection Regulation. I'm your host, Carl Gottlieb, Data Protection Consultant and Director of the Security Solutions Provider Cognition. Each episode, I'll be providing information, insights and inspiration to help you on your GDPR journey. You'll find show notes and useful resources on the website, thegdprguide.com, as well as details for getting in touch with me directly. In this special episode, I bring you a recent GDPR interview I gave to the Insecurity podcast, presented by Sean Walsh of the next generation antivirus vendor, Silence. I delve into the potential quagmire that is GDPR compliance and what it means for organisations doing business in the EU. Now, some of you may know that I have a long history with Silence. I won't give you the full history, but essentially I was super sceptical when it came to antivirus until I played with Silence. And now I wholeheartedly recommend it. Please have a listen to the podcast, and when you're done, give Silence a quick Google. They're spelt C-Y-L-A-N-C-E, pronounced Silence. And if you want to take a look at it, send me a message.
Hey, welcome to the Insecurity Podcast, your home for information security news, trends, and commentary, with your host, Sean Walsh.
Hello, and welcome to Insecurity. Today we have with us Carl Gottlieb, and we're going to be talking about GDPR compliance. And yes, we live for acronym soup around here. I think that, you know, the fundamental reason that marketing people exist are to invent acronyms so that we can feel good about it, or in this case, government regulators. And, you know, it's interesting. I never thought I'd be quoting Ronald Reagan, but I thought this was very apropos. Protecting the rights of even the least individual amongst us is basically the only excuse government has for even existing. So I really hope that what we're doing here with GDPR and the EU rules and regulations does in fact do that, which is protect every individual as we move forward. So as we look at the GDPR, a couple of things occur. So obviously we had this GDPR, General Data and Protection Regulation, come into law for 28 EU countries in May of 2016. And we're now in the beginning of a two-year transition period of the law, which will begin to be enforced in 2018. And I think what's really truly significant about this that maybe not a lot of people realize is the global impact on this. This is something that will touch not only people that are in the EU, but every country, every service provider that provides capabilities into the EU. And I don't think most people really understand that, that a lot of folks in APAC and the States and Canada are not thinking, hey, I have to comply with this because it's not one of my regulatory items. But in fact, it is. And it's interesting, Fortune magazine published an article in 2016 where they said GDPR is the toughest privacy law in the world. So that's quite a bit of staging and setup for you, Carl. And when you think about what this means, I think that, you know, it'll be quite a heated area for people as we go forward. So with that, I'd like to officially introduce Carl, since I've made a couple references already. We have with us today Carl Gottlieb, Consulting Director for Cognition and the founder of TestMyAV, and a longtime friend of Silence and expert on all things security. So with that, welcome, Carl.
Thank you very much.
So let's jump in with a couple of questions. So what does GDPR mean to individuals, and how does it help them? It seems like this gives them new power to escalate violations that they haven't had before.
Absolutely, Sean. So GDPR is really about empowering the individual within the EU. This isn't really about regulating companies. This is about giving rights back to the people, essentially giving control back. So one of the rights that is new, for instance, within GDPR is the right to portability. So portability gives you the right to say, you have some of my data, I want to take it back, I want to view it, I potentially want to have you give it to one of your competitors, so I want to switch service from one bank to another. Another one of the rights is the right to erasure. So essentially saying, I no longer want to be with you as a customer, therefore please remove all data and all traces you have of me. Now, this is something many people have heard of within Europe as the right to be forgotten. Now, that is being extended within the GDPR. And essentially, if you don't have the need to keep my data anymore, you no longer have it. And the last big thing I'd say about rights is that we now have the right to remedy within our own country. So we can take anyone to court, we can sue for even non-material impact of a breach of compliance. And the local data protection regulators, which in the UK is the Information Commissioner's Office, every EU country has one, can impose fines but can also enforce compliance on any country that and any organization that fails to comply.
So let's talk a little bit about that compliance. Given how broad-reaching the legislation is, what do you think are the top four or five things that IT departments should start to look at in preparation for this 2018 deadline?
So the first thing I would say is to really focus on those heavy penalties. You know, this is real, and each data protection authority within each country in the EU has already said that come May 26, 2018, they will start pushing fines out straight away. So, you know, give it a day, they'll know who's not compliant, and then really be looking to make a mark with compliance. One of the areas to do with fines within the GDPR is it states fines must be dissuasive. This isn't just about penalizing you for non-compliance, it's about dissuading anyone else from not complying. So really approach your IT security program with that penalty thing at the back of your mind.
So that means they're going to make examples out of the first couple.
Absolutely. And they already are from the existing legislation. You can see them starting to ramp up. But come May next year, yeah, examples will be coming all over the place. So the next thing I'd say is to focus on two important words in the middle of the regulation. So this is about data protection. It's not just about privacy. So if we focus on protecting the data, and at the very least, the things you can do are making sure you don't get breached, you know, like a proper data breach, then the first thing to say is, well, how are we getting breached these days? It's not 0 days. It really is the most basic thing. It is the vast majority of malware. It is the vast majority of phishing attacks. So doing some of these IT security basics right and making sure you test the effectiveness of these controls is crucial. And these are things that come 2016, 2017, we now have exceedingly good protection. There are amazing tools out there. You know, 5 years ago, I would have said to you quite openly, there are not good tools for antivirus. There are not good tools for anti-phishing. We're now past that. We are now in a state where many customers of products such as Silence Protect say, I've installed a product. I now don't think about malware anymore. You know, we have got to that place. But also we need to be aware of overreaching with controls. A key point of GDPR is minimization. So the idea that you should only collect the data that you truly need. Now, if we apply this to internal employees, which are also subject to GDPR, we can say that we shouldn't be rolling out biometric controls and biometric analysis of like biometric and fingerprint swipe cards, door access systems, just to keep the time of people. So if we don't truly need these things, we shouldn't be collecting them. Now, that goes well against the concept of big data. You know, capture as much data as you can into a big data lake and then analyze it later on. GDPR is the opposite. Collect what you need and justify why you need it. And then a big part of GDPR is also breach notifications. So these are coming in regulations all around the world, like a recent one in New York, essentially saying these need to be swift and effective if you need to notify. So think about tool sets and processes and procedures that enable you to, once you are made aware of a data breach, act accordingly. You know, how do you know what's been breached? How can you verify that data? How can you see what else might be impacted? But lastly, remember that no one tool can save the day. People are touting encryption as a savior for GDPR. Now, encryption will help, you know, whether it be data at rest, in motion, wherever. But in reality, that's only serving one part of it. Tools will help, but there's many other areas you need to focus on.
Well, and I think, you know, we all know that while encryption is useful, there's still plenty of malware and other stuff that can get around it if you don't have the right security protections in place. From a security angle, are there any other specific things that you would add to that commentary?
I would say that
focusing on the data is key. So first of all, working out where you can, where is that data, where does it flow? So really strong analysis of that data mapping is key. And then controlling and analyzing and knowing who's consented to it, how have you got access to that data, what third parties may have access and whether they should be revoked, a continuous cycle of managing that data correctly. And then the typical kind of cyber controls like phishing, antivirus, breach prevention, breach analysis detection, all these kind of tools need to sit on top of that. Now, I'd argue those kind of cyber tools are the basics we should all have. We should all, you know, GDPR or not, we should have those embedded in there. Do them right from day one. What we will see is people being fined heavily for deploying tools such as an antivirus product and not testing it and it not being effective. You know, people that for years have said, yeah, we've got antivirus, we've ticked that box. You know, we are compliant with things like PCI, but we did know that we were getting infected and we were getting having to do re-images of machines every week. You know, that is a clear indication your control is failing. And when the regulators come after you, if you've been seen to be failing for all these years and haven't done a thing about it, that is a sign you will get fined.
Yeah, and it's very interesting, you know, that in the States we've just passed a law that enables internet service providers to sell people's information. It does seem that in many ways the current administration is going in the opposite direction of where GDPR is. As a U.S.-based company, we're faced with this dilemma. What advice would you give in particular to places that have less regulatory rules or enact or are changing the regulatory rules to be less like GDPR, and to make sure that they don't loosen their controls to a point that they're no longer compliant?
I suppose I'd always say do as much as you can. A default scenario at the moment for many people is them saying, well, I'm American, I don't need to comply with GDPR, or vice versa in Europe with situations like HIPAA. We need to be focused on do as much as you can and do it as best you can. And in the case of GDPR, most of the things are basic controls, they're basic advice, they're basic guidance. And the principles of GDPR are quite important. These are things that override the loopholes. Now, if we look at something like PCI, many people comply with PCI, but still get breached. You know, I'm sure Target was PCI compliant. It didn't save them that day. Whereas the principles that are contained within GDPR set out the meaning that if you try and find a loophole and get around the spirit of GDPR, then you will still fail to comply with the principles. And the principles, for instance, the first principle of GDPR is that data should be processed fairly and lawfully. So if it can be shown that you tried to skirt the law and were unfair, then you are in breach of compliance. So many people can learn from GDPR. And yes, some things are going to be hard, like a 72-hour breach notification. However, doing the best you can is going to be key wherever you are.
Fair enough. So on your end of the world, what do you think Brexit does to compliance for GDPR?
So we are seeing much confusion at the moment in the UK, especially about what does Brexit mean. And it's actually incredibly simple. Brexit doesn't change a thing for UK organizations. It doesn't change a thing for anyone. GDPR is now in UK law. So UK, because of the 1972 Act of becoming part of the EU, European laws have precedent over the UK. So GDPR came out in May 2016. We're now in this two-year transition period. But GDPR is very much part of UK law. It's just not being enforced yet. No one's going to get fined yet. So what that means is come next year, come May 2018, GDPR will be live, will be subject to this EU regulation. But a year later, and come end of March 2019, when this Brexit happens, this UK leaving the EU, the UK government will enact what we're calling it, the repeal bill. Essentially, all these EU laws that apply to the UK now are going to be converted into UK law. A complete mirroring. So we're going to create replicas of every single one. The only difference is when the kind of EU GDPR gets converted into the UK GDPR, we'll remove some of the EU references and sort of rewrite them to be UK. Imagine like a find and replace for EU to become UK. Now, so what that means is come March 2019, come post-Brexit, we'll have exactly the same laws in place. We don't need to worry about it at all. The only thing, we just don't know what it's going to be named. You know, it can't be called GDPR, so maybe it'll be GDPR Next Gen.
Yeah, we do love to do that as marketing people. And I got to say that, you know, as a as someone who deals with marketing, you know, when I look at GDPR, you know, it's really, you know, your point about collect only what you need as opposed to creating the big lake of data and then analyzing later. It kind of goes against the whole principle of what we're seeing in marketing trends as we go forward. So this will be a very, very interesting time for us to justify what is required and what is necessary. That's an opinion that I think will be one of the areas where there will be a great deal of debate on GDPR as we go forward. Now, one of the things you've mentioned is the fines. So how bad can this get for companies? How big are these fines?
They're big, very big. So there's really two types of financial penalties people need to be aware of. The first one everyone is hearing about. The second one no one's thinking about at all. So the first one is the administrative fines. So these administrative fines are the fines set out inside the GDPR itself, where the regulator within a country can penalize you for non-compliance. And the current maximum within GDPR is 4% of your global annual revenue of your parent company.
Damn.
So in the case of Google, that's $3.5 billion for non-compliance. This is big, big stuff.
I don't know what the proper UK term is, but in the States, we would say, make the baseball analogy, that they're swinging for the fences on this one.
Yeah, absolutely. We keep coming back to that word dissuasive. You know, these fines, no one's going to hit that 4% maximum from day one. However, it needs to be there as an upper limit and really set out how aggressive this regulation is and how much teeth it's got. So the second side of this that no one's really talking about is lawsuits. So the GDPR sets out the ability to for any individual or anyone representing individuals, so maybe a union or some kind of body of people that brings a case against an organization for non-compliance, these class action lawsuits are where we're going to see the big, big money coming out. So imagine a class action lawsuit for a data breach like Yahoo. That's going to be the kind of stuff that's going to dwarf the administrative fines and where everyone needs to be careful.
That's good to know. You know, I remember when some of the early Sarbanes-Oxley rules came into place in the States in the early 90s, there was a great article that was put out on one company called J&I, and they used the expression killing a mosquito with a sledgehammer. And that sort of reminds me, I think, of what we're going to see in these early dissuasive penalties. So when you look at GDPR, what do you think is the biggest weakness for companies today?
So what we're seeing across the board is people treating this like a bit like PCI or a standard IT security compliance measure. So they say, you know, what are the controls? What do we need to apply? Thinking about the fines, thinking about that, thinking about the word breach a lot. And in an IT concept, we always think about breach like Yahoo. We're thinking about data being breached. But really in GDPR, the fines are there for breach of compliance. So any aspect of GDPR that you fail to comply with, even if no data is lost, is definitely subject to a penalty. So one area that people are really struggling with at the moment is the right to portability. And this right is really alien to what most organizations do these days. So the right itself says that as a data subject or as a sort of a customer, I can go to you as a controller, like kind of a provider. Let's pick an example like Spotify. So I can say to you, I no longer wish to be a customer, but first of all, give me all my data in a nice, easy to read form. So that's the kind of thing that Facebook has been struggling with over the years, this kind of nice human readable output of what data you've got on me. But the second aspect of portability says that, well, okay, I'd now like to go to one of your competitors, let's say Google Music, and you've now got to export the data you've got on me, send it over to Google yourselves in a readable format that they can import, let's say XML. And Google Music, you've now got to have the ability to import that data. So any data controllers out there, they've now got to do these kind of three things. They've got to be able to give access to your data in a human readable format, but also be able to export and import that. this is all very new for most organizations, and those companies that rely on their stickiness of holding customers because of the data you've got on them, let's say your Spotify playlist or your music history, that no longer is there. So a competitive advantage that's fantastic for many small organizations is to say, hey, you know, we're a small health provider, we're a small mortgage provider. You can now come to us, import your 30 years of data from your previous health provider, and it's going to be nice and easy for you at no cost. That's going to be helpful. And that's why we're seeing some companies move very quickly into the GDPR compliance world.
So, Carl, that begs the question, is there a standard data interchange format defined for this GDPR portability? Because I could see where that would be a nightmare. And I think the second part is that as people do attempt to go through the portability exercise, they will be both shocked, terrified, and possibly appalled at the amount of data that these folks have on them and the correlation they've already made about who they associate with and the depth of, I will say, for lack of a better term, tracking that exists in those systems today.
You're absolutely right. People within companies need to be very aware of being fair and being lawful. And if you're collecting this data and what data you've already got, it's going to come out. You know, there's going to be freedom of information requests, or in the case of GDPR, they're called subject access requests, all over the place. And one interesting thing about GDPR is you can no longer charge for a standard request. Previously, you could maybe charge 10 euros or 20 euros, but for a simple request, you have 30 days to be able to give someone that data for free. And so, yeah, people will be absolutely shocked. One useful thing is that data that you infer, so let's say I capture your data, Sean, and then go and analyze things about you and create some secondary data, that is still the company's proprietary IP, so you may not have to give that away. But most of that data you would, and so people will be shocked. A great example is health records saying, give me everything from the last 20 years, and me going through that with a fine-tooth comb looking for cases of negligence and then launching a malpractice suit. That's going to make it incredibly easy to do that. Now, the challenge from your first point was about, are there any standards being created? And the answer is no. The issue you have is that if you look at any individual industry, let's say healthcare, and say, right, you've all got to get into a room, create a nice standard that allows you to import and export between them. Well, whose benefit is that? Nobody wants to lose customers by having a really easy export function. But we do all want a really easy import function. So there are conversations going on within each individual sector, but it's incredibly hard when it's so competitive. So what we're expecting is that if you were to go to yahoo.com and say, give me all of my emails, they will have to do that in a standard format, let's say a .eml file or a big CSV database, something that you really could import elsewhere. As opposed to one big PDF. So it has to be in a useful format, but still we're way off those standards, and it's a very difficult place to be.
So this is clearly something that has incredibly broad-reaching implications for people. Aside from hiring you to come in and explain it to them, where else could people go to look at resources that would give them the tools they need to fully comprehend what they're getting into here?
So we've set up a dedicated website just for that purpose, for GDPR. So it's named thegdprguy.com. And on there, it's all free resources. It's all really a real-world explanation of what GDPR means to you and how you can go and move ahead with it. And if you have any questions, you can feel free to contact me there. There's various routes to get in touch. And you may see me around the world presenting on GDPR as well.
Well, Carl, I really appreciate you taking the time and giving us this in-depth look at GDPR and what it means for security as well. Appreciate your taking the time to be with us. And if there's anything else that you want to add to this, let us know, and we'd be happy to have you back.
Fantastic. That's great. Thank you a lot. Cheers, Sean.
You can read more about the GDPR and find show notes for this episode at thegdprguy.com. And don't forget, if you'd like any direct assistance with your GDPR compliance, then please get in touch. I'll be happy to help. I've been your host, Carl Gottlieb, and I am the GDPR Guy. Thanks for listening.